You are listening to Heroically Random with Vincent and Jason. Heroically Random.
So what's been going on, man? How you doing?
Well, I'm now in the land of the unemployed.
Yeah. How's that going? Any news on that front?
Well, I got my letter of separation on, what was it, Wednesday?
Okay.
Yeah, I got it on Wednesday. That I was, as of that day, I would no longer be employed. So I was like, okay, well, I half expected that since, still don't really have a firm idea of when these physical restrictions will be lifted off of me, or at least increased to the point to where I could work.
Right. So, but at least you can now collect unemployment, right?
Right.
Good.
And
that's a plus.
Unfortunately, I'm also going to have to cash out my 401k, but...
Oh, God, really?
Yeah, well, it wasn't a substantial amount of money anyway, so...
Right.
It was substantial enough to where it's going to hurt to, you know, think, oh, man, that's... I'm going to have to reaccumulate that over, you know, however long it takes me to reaccumulate that, but... I mean, with the way the rate of inflation is going, you know, it's like, unless you have, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars at least saved up by maybe your 40s, you know, who knows if that's actually going to be enough money for you to live off of when you retire.
Right. Exactly.
So,
truth be told, my retirement plan is just dying. That's pretty much my only hope. It's to die.
What is it? We need, like, what is that sci-fi series where you reach a certain age and then that's it, no more? There's a couple different
Logan's Run. Logan's Run.
Yeah,
yeah. Where the little jewel in your hand would change color, and that's when it's time for you to get recycled or whatever they did.
Yep, your expiration date has arrived.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, there's been a couple movies that I've watched that actually tie into that idea.
I guess it's somewhat in that vein, but did you see In Time?
Yes, I did.
With Justin Timberlake, Olivia Wilde. I actually really enjoyed that movie.
Yeah, that movie was really good.
I found that premise of time being a currency to be fascinating. Like, I thought that was a really cool way to go about it.
Yeah, it was. It was a very good movie. I need more time. I have to buy more time, and then stealing it from the rich.
Mm-hmm.
That was great. So
yeah, some people criticized it, but I thought it was a cool premise.
Yeah.
I mean, really, what is currency? You know, what you go to work to get money, but all money does is gives you the means to continue to live, you know, live in your home and buy food. And if you don't have money to have that bill, basically you expire, you die. I mean, it's kind of almost the same way. I mean, you know, there's luxuries and whatnot, but, you know, they kind of talked about that too, where the rich, they use their time as means of payment for luxuries.
Right.
So I thought it was a cool premise. Now, would I like to see that actually come about?
No.
Although it'd be nice to be 25 forever. I think that's what it was, right? 25?
Yeah, I think so.
I think
so.
As soon as you turn 25, that's when your clock started.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind being 25 for the rest of my life.
Yeah, and you end up being the same age as your parents.
Yeah, that was a little, like, that was interesting. You know, that was the one thing, because, I mean, you know, it's Olivia Wilde, and to have her as your mom, like, you know, when you're 25 years old, well, now your mom's like 50, so it's a different story. But when your mom's also 25 and she's Olivia Wilde, it's like, huh.
Yeah, you know.
Almost slightly Oedipusian. Is that a word? Oedipusian?
I
guess not.
I know where you're going with that. But
right.
Yeah. I wonder if incest is outlawed in that universe.
I would imagine it's just bad all around.
Yeah, so I've been watching a ton of movies recently.
Mm.
My I think my vacation my vacation in Draenor is coming to an end.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Why do you say that?
It's gotten to the point where I'm logging on to do my chores, essentially. And
okay.
And, you know, I've done looking for raid. And first wing of Elevar was a joke. Second wing, not quite a joke, but still pretty easy.
Okay.
I mean, you can die, and actually a good portion of the raid can die, but as long as there's, you know, at least three people who know what they're doing, they can pretty much power through the encounter, so.
Right. But they've pretty much said that, you know, raid finders tourist mode almost at this point.
Yeah, and it only yields what, eye level 640 gear.
Right.
So yeah. Right. So, I mean, it's not too spectacular, so.
Okay. You have no real interest in getting on, like, a solid raid team?
No, not really. I mean, I've never been a raider. I don't think I have the patience to be a raider.
Right.
Like, wiping and wiping and wiping. I don't particularly like that. You know, it's not to say that as long as I was making progress, it'd feel okay, but still. You know, I'm not a raider. I'm your more hardcore casual. Well, no, I'm not even hardcore casual. I'm just
casually hardcore.
What is it? I'm a tryhard, I guess.
A tryhard. I like that.
Yeah.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah. So, I do the best with what I can do, without involving a raid team, you know, commitments and stuff. So.
Yeah, I miss raiding. Ooh, a little bubble in my throat. I miss raiding quite a bit, actually. I really enjoyed raiding a lot. I like the competitive aspect of it. I liked always trying to top the DPS meter. That was a big thing for me. I liked min-maxing and the spreadsheets and, you know, delving into that aspect of it. And the teamwork aspect of it, too. You know, the communication aspect of it. Unfortunately, Cataclysm just obliterated my guild, absolutely obliterated it, and that's pretty much what ended my... I've really barely raided in Cataclysm. I mean, I finished it out. I killed Deathwing, but, you know, Mists was rough, you know, at the beginning. That's why I kind of took a break, just because my guild just evaporated. And it wasn't just... I mean, it wasn't Cataclysm. It wasn't the expansion's fault entirely. Just personal things kind of blew my guild apart, and I never really found a tight-knit group again after that. That's what I think. WoW, you need that. You need a good guild, a good group. You know, it's a very social game. You can play it solo, and, you know, I did a lot of stuff solo, but I think the real fun in that game is the solid group that you're with all the time, every time, that kind of thing. I don't know. That's just the way I look at it, which is kind of strange because at the moment, you know, I'm playing again, not much. I mean, my rogue's only 94, just about to turn 95, but I still don't have a solid group that I'm playing with or a guild that I'm playing with yet. Mm-hmm. I was actually talking to Seraphis from the Sundering. I was telling them I'm thinking about transferring my rogue over to Dalaran to run with them in the Phalanx of Nod. I mean, they're a cool group. I love hanging out with them. And, so I might do that with my Alliance side rogue.
Yeah. You know, it's still a little surprising that with the ease of playing with other people on different realms, they don't make the realm transfer cost, you know, as prohibitive as it currently is.
Yeah, it is. It's a little much still. It really is. That's the one thing. Like, I mean, I would have done it already, except it's almost 2 months subscription.
Yeah.
For a realm transfer.
Yeah.
And that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
I almost regret transferring my rogue over to Earthen Ring, but I'm okay with it because a lot of my horde characters are on Cenarius, and it's like, I just, you know, I don't want to, you know, either level up characters to replace those tunes or transfer them. Because it's way too much money.
Right.
At the very least, maybe, you know, maybe $20 for your first, and then if you spend, like, if you pay 30, 35. You can transfer as many tunes from one realm to the other. That would be good.
That would be good.
A compromise, I think.
Absolutely. Because, absolutely. I
mean, all they're doing is transferring data from one, you know, one server blade to another. That's all that they're doing.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of things that can, you know, hiccup in the process, but still, you know, it's not a complicated process. It doesn't cost $15 to do that.
Right.
Or 25, I mean.
25, yeah.
Yeah.
I knew what you meant. It's okay. I knew what you meant.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so cost prohibitive. And it is. I guess maybe they kept it there so that if they dropped it, a lot more people would be using it. And I guess more to the point, I was listening to Convert to Raid, and they were talking about how the Chinese raid groups were being excluded from the race to world first, since this was the first time that they've ever been in the hunt with the North American and European and Oceanic servers.
Right.
And I guess also the Korean, Taiwanese servers. But they were realm hopping so that they could buy gear off the black market auction house. Heroic High Mall, Mythic Warforged Blackrock Foundry, the next raid. And it's like, why is that even available?
Right. Yeah, that shouldn't be available. Even on the black market auction house, that shouldn't be available.
Yeah, so heard reports that they were realm hopping to do that. And then, you know, obviously with that extra gear, you know, those eye levels matter a whole lot more now with the item squish than they ever did before.
Absolutely, they do. You're right. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the Chinese servers, because I would love, absolutely love, if Blizzard allowed the North American realms, all the realms, European realms, to have a payment system like they do in the Asian servers.
Yeah.
You know, where it isn't that monthly sub, you're basically pay for play. I mean, that would work out perfectly for me, because, yeah.
$30 and get, you know, what, 50, 60, no, it'd have to be more than that. Maybe like 100 hours.
Right, exactly. That would be perfect, because, I mean, right now I'm lucky to log 3 hours a week, you know, if that.
Yeah. You know. Man.
I mean, I love the game, but I'm playing Heroes so much that.
Yeah. Right after Warlords came out, I was spending maybe 40, 50 hours in Warlords.
Oh, wow. Well, no wonder you're.
Yeah, it's like I was on disability.
You're on. Yeah, exactly.
Well, yep. Unapproved disability.
Right.
Yeah.
Unofficial, right.
Yeah, I don't want to get into that, but needless to say, I no longer have Cigna, so that's good. My wife and I were able to enroll in, I think, Medicare or Medi-Cal. I forget which one it is. And we're now with Kaiser. So.
Kaiser Soze?
Yes, Kaiser Soze.
Kaiser Soze, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I have Cigna as well with my company, and I'm very much not impressed at all.
It's, well, hope you never need to ever apply for disability. I mean, if it's not a black and white, you know, oh, you broke a bone, you're pretty much fighting for your disability insurance to kick in.
No, I believe that.
And I've been fighting for 6 months. And
I believe that entirely. That's, there is no bigger thief on this planet than the insurance industry.
Yeah. Yeah. And what is it? So I called my neurologist. You know, I said I wasn't going to get into this, but I guess just a little bit. Called my neurologist, spoke with the nurse there, and said, you know, Cigna is still there. Essentially, what they're saying is the work restrictions that have been placed on, they don't see why those work restrictions were placed upon me, based upon my MRI and EMG results. And so it's like, so what I need is I need my neurologist to better explain and tie, you know, the work restrictions to those results. So that way they can say, oh, okay, this is why he has him on, you know, you can't lift over 15 pounds, can't twist and bend at the waist. So, you know, those are pretty limiting.
Right.
I mean, my job required me to lift up to 70 pounds, and, you know, I'm routinely bending at the waist, you know, to pick containers up, put them right. in the van, you know, so it's like that inhibits my ability to work, and it sucks because I loved that job. And, well, I loved the being out on the road part of the job. I didn't like the being at the branch and having to deal with the politics and
right.
Yeah, so but yeah, I'm gonna miss some of my coworkers, but you know, this is gonna be a new beginning.
Yeah. Good.
Yep, I'm good. My half plan right now, I haven't fully realized it because I still haven't quite had that epiphany moment as to what am I gonna do with my life now? I'm going to really start to focus on getting my portfolio set up and trying to live as an artist and a designer.
That would be wonderful because you are an amazing graphic designer and you're not doing it.
And I've neglected those talents. I've kind of like just wasted them over the past 9 years with, because I remember when I first went to work for what was then Vanguard Vaults, it's like, this is temporary, you know,
right.
I'm just going to do this until I get a job doing, you know, design, you know, whatever. That way I have a job and I can still look for what I really want to do. And, the driving part got into my blood. And then it was like, it was awesome because I had just, transferred, like, moved up to Sacramento, so I didn't know the area, and being a driver forces you to learn the area, so
right.
I think I know Sacramento almost better than I know the South Bay area now. But that's because, you know, I'm driving every day, or was right. driving every day, so
right.
But yeah, so
yeah, I kind of get a little bit of that with mine.
Yeah,
sort of.
I remember when you changed jobs, you were so excited because you're like, this is going to be great. This is gonna be awesome. I'm not going to work these terrible hours. Deal with all the terrible weather, which you still are.
Yeah, although it is much better weather-wise just because
you're not out in it all the time.
I'm not over the summer I wasn't standing on a blacktop surface right. getting in and out of cars that are 140 degrees plus.
Right.
You know, I was in an air conditioned vehicle and walking from an air conditioned vehicle to an air conditioned office, that kind of thing. So that wasn't bad. We haven't had any snow really much to speak of, but when it does snow, I can just stay at home and work from home versus having to drive in a blizzard when the governor calls a state of emergency and orders all vehicles off the road.
Yeah.
I have to drive 25 miles to a car dealership and plow and shovel snow for 6 hours.
Yep, that sounds terrible.
It was awful. And that was when the boss decided to put on the All Neil Diamond channel on Sirius. Mm-hmm. And we both know how that went. So, yes, I was very excited about that aspect. Would have been nice if they're a little bit more honest with me about the state
of pay.
Yeah.
Or your ability to actually sell the product.
Yeah, and the state of the territory. You know, it was never they made a big deal about how I was inheriting 92 clients and you know, it's all well and good except only 10 of those people were actually ordering anything. And of those 10, only 3 of them were netting more than a $7 a month commission.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch. So yeah. So you get a pittance in terms of base pay, but most of your pay comes from commission.
Yes.
Yeah. The life of the salesman. I'm so
it
glad
should.
I'm not a salesman.
I mean, most should, but unfortunately, most at the moment is my base. Just because the territory was just so brutally let go. The time between me and the previous rep was almost a year. The time he was only in the territory for 6 months, in between him and the rep previous to him was a year and a half. And that rep was only in the territory for about a year.
Yeah.
So,
Wow. Yeah.
So it's basically a territory that was just abandoned.
Yeah. And when there's been no, because sales is very much based on interpersonal relationships that you develop with clients.
Yes.
You know, if you develop that kind of,
yes, Nolan, what is it? What? You can open the door. Come on in.
But, when you don't have those relationships, that have been fostered and cared for, yeah, it's brutal.
Yes.
Because it's almost like you're doing cold sales, and those are terrible.
It is 99% of what I'm doing is cold calling, cold sales, telemarketing, just like begging. It was not what I was led to believe that I was going to be doing, put it to that way.
So, in other words, you've been watching lots of Tommy Boy for inspiration.
That's good. That is good. I can sell you a warranty on a steak, but something about the butcher's head up the bull's something.
you could take the butcher's word for it, or you could stick your head up the bull's ass or something like that.
Right, yes.
Totally nice. Messed up that quote as well.
That's okay. That's all right. That movie was, 17 years ago? No, gosh, more than that.
Tommy Boy? Let's see.
Had to have been. 1993?
4? Yeah, it was, I think it came out while I was in high school, so. 95 came out the year that I graduated.
95. Okay. Oh, so it was 19 years old.
Yeah.
Hmm. It's still timeless, though.
Yeah, it is.
Yes. Speaking of movies, you said you watched a lot of movies. What have you been watching?
All right. Here's the list. This is from over the past month. Guardians of the Galaxy. Finally saw that.
Awesome.
Earth to Echo. Loved that one.
Need to see that still.
Taken 2. I watched it because I saw ads for Taken 3. And I was like,
there's a Taken 3 coming?
Yeah.
In
2 weeks.
What?
Yeah, the second one was absolutely terrible. I mean, I wouldn't call it charm, but all of that, you know, what was in Taken, the original, it was a great movie. I loved it. It was fun to watch.
Yeah.
And
I have a certain set of skills.
And all of that was, just abandoned in the second movie. I mean, he's still kind of a badass, but he's really showing his age now. I mean,
he didn't become a badass until he was aged. That's the weird thing about his career. He was not a action guy until he was old.
Yeah. But now he's reached that threshold where he can't really do a whole lot of, there's no way he could do anything the Bourne series or or the more recent James Bond movies.
Right. Right. Yeah. What? An interesting thought.
It's
could
kind
he
of
do
like
Bond? He, I mean, he couldn't. Doing... He couldn't do the Bond that Daniel Craig is doing now.
Right.
But he could.
Maybe
he could possibly do the Bond that, like Pierce Brosnan style, that was less physical, more.
Yeah, more gadget oriented.
Yeah, more gadget oriented. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, because. All of the fight sequences just felt really, really choreographed.
Mm-hmm.
There was no visceral feel to the combat in Taken 2, so I was pretty disappointed with that.
Hmm.
But then I saw Big Hero 6 finally. I absolutely loved that movie.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It is so good.
Yeah.
So good.
And what was it? Just the other day, my wife and I, we were trying to figure out, or no, actually, I think it was maybe with my daughter. We were trying to figure out what those big floating turbine things in the air were. I was like, maybe it's some kind of futuristic air filtration system to clean up the environment.
And trying to remember.
Like they were big, they looked like fish kites that they would have in Japan.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Now I remember what you're talking about. Yeah. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Now I remember what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Right.
So, loved that movie. Then we rented a movie. What is it? Zach Braff's most recent his second directorial movie with Wish I Was Here. And that movie, you need tissues for.
Wish I Was Here. Did I see that? I may have seen that.
Yeah, it was so good. It was about Zach Braff playing as a like a 30-something, like late 30-something father with two kids, and he's an aspiring actor, and but he hasn't had a job since a dandruff commercial, and
Is
then
this the
his
one that he crowdsourced some of
yes
the this
yes
was the Kickstarter one? Okay, I have not seen this.
yeah it
Okay.
was really good. My wife and I both loved it, and holy moly, did it tear me up inside, because a lot of what he was going through, I kind of saw parallels in my own life, you know, obviously slight nuance differences and everything. But it was like he was at a crossroads. I'm kind of at a crossroads right now. The
Right.
only difference is I'm coming at it from the other end where I had a job, and now it's like, now what do I do? Because I can't do that job anymore. So,
Right.
but holy moly, that movie made me cry. So, then we watched The Giver, which was based off of a book that my wife read in the seventh grade. And that had Jeff Bridges in it. And I think I've come to the conclusion that I will pretty much watch almost anything with Jeff Bridges in it.
I am in complete and utter agreeance with you. Yes. I actually listened to, and I meant to watch that, and I haven't seen the movie yet. His interview on The Nerdist, and they were
Oh,
talking
really?
about The Giver. It was right at the end of his press, that ridiculous thing they make all actors do, like where they sit in a hotel room for 18 hours and get interviewed by
Everybody.
everybody. I could not imagine how just insanely awful that must be.
Well, I mean, I guess actors are used to having long days, because a lot of times when they're filming, sometimes they do have 18-hour days.
I guess. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. But
But a lot of time
he
they're
was
just
talking about The
sitting.
Giver, and it sounded amazing.
Yeah, it was a good movie. I liked it. They used a really cool, well, I mean, it's been used before, like in The Wizard of Oz, where you have black and white, and then it slowly graduate, you know,
Oh, love that.
as the main character, like as he's been given these emotions and feelings, he starts to see color in the world. It's pretty cool.
That's very cool. I
My
like that.
daughter was like, "Why is it in black and white?" And I told her, "It's a device that they're using, a mechanic to convey something." And I just butchered that, but yeah, she liked the movie too. It was kind of
Okay.
intense at the end,
Yeah.
but she made it through.
All
Then
right, good.
my wife and I watched a movie that we had high hopes for just based off of the trailer, because it looked really cool.
Okay.
And it has Lawrence Fishburne in it. And it's
Nice.
a movie called The Signal. And
Didn't say it.
the premise was, like the short little synopsis was, three hackers are lured into a trap by another hacker. And I was like, okay. So we watched the trailer, and it totally seemed different than that. Because like Lawrence Fishburne is in like full hazmat gear and stuff. He has what is it? One of those helms where it's like hard angled, and then it's illuminated inside so you can see the face.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So
Almost like the helms from the Abyss.
So I went into it thinking that it was going to turn into some like, you know, apocalypse, or you know, something terrible is going on in the world.
Right.
And do you care about spoilers? Oh, I don't know if our
No.
listeners care about spoilers, but
That's
I'm just
fine.
going to spoil it for you because the movie was
Go.
terrible.
All
Well, it ended up being terrible.
right.
The ending, like the whole movie starts off, these three friends, they're on a road trip. Two of the friends are boyfriend girlfriend, and then there's a
Okay.
third friend, and they're, I guess all three of them are hackers, but it's mainly just the two guys that are the hackers. And so like they're getting messed around with by this hacker named Nomad, and he was like, "Are you agitated?" And like so they try, you know, like finding where he is, and all of a sudden, like this hacker sends over this file, and it unzips, and it's a video feed from the laptop on the hotel room, or on the hotel bed that they're in. So they're like, "What the?" And so like one of the hackers, the boyfriend of the couple. He has he's developing a problem with his spine, and he's like on the hand crutches, and
okay.
So I don't know why I brought that up right now. Like, but Walt anyways, Jr. So anyways, because his girlfriend is moving to California. They were MIT students. This is somewhat related to the whole plot of the movie, that this hacker hacked into the MIT servers, and these three got blamed for it, and they almost got expelled. So the girlfriend's now moving to California for whatever reason. I don't know. Maybe she's going to go to Cal Poly. I don't know. But that was never explained. So they're, you know, they're driving through, like, they go through Colorado and everything, and then they get to Nevada, and they, like, while they were in this hotel room, they traced his, the signal that he, that, where, you know, this hacker's, like, they trace it to this remote location in Nevada. So they get to Nevada, then they go to this remote location, and it's, like, in the middle of nowhere. I mean, absolutely nowhere. And it's a dilapidated, abandoned building, and they're like, this doesn't seem right. So they go inside, except for the girlfriend. They tell the girlfriend to stay inside. And it's, like, there's nothing there. But they go down to the basement, and they see, like, what used to... There were, like, server rack... what do you call those things? Brackets that were, like, screwed into the wall. But right. they were dusted over for, like, a long time. So, this is weird. Then all of a sudden, they hear screams. So they're like, oh, my God, let's go save the girl. So they go back upstairs, and she's not in the car. And then they hear, like, her grunting from, like, the... bushes, and then they go to find her, and then she flies up into the sky, and you're like, what the hell? And then it, like, cuts to black, and then the main guy wakes up, and he's was he strapped into a wheelchair at that point? I don't remember, but he's been taken into custody at this point. And
okay,
so he thinks he's been taken into custody by some weird offshoot of the CDC because of all the hazmat suits and everything. And, like, they're asking him, like, Lawrence Fishburne is the interviewer, and he's asking questions, you know, like, very basic, simple questions. And he's all like, well, why am I here? And why are you in hazmat suits? And he's like, well, you know, with your condition, we don't know what we're dealing with here. So, you know, we're taking every precaution. It keeps progressing slowly. And, like, he starts, you know, showing off his mental capacity, but because, like, he's figured out their system. Like, the personnel there move, you know, along the same path at the same time every day and everything. And, like, he's memorized all this, and he's figured out the code to their, to the pad for the doors and everything. And, eventually it gets to the point, and, he almost escapes. He almost escapes. And they're trying to strap him back in, and his girlfriend, who's in a coma, is there. And, like, she's talking to him. And then all of a sudden, like, she's not talking to him because she's still passed out. And it's like, okay, this is very weird. This is, you know, it's like, I'm like, trying to think, okay, is this all in his head? Like, and then so he... The personnel are trying to strap him down. He falls, like, they're, like, struggling with him. He ends up causing the bed that he's on to tip over. And then both of the personnel are like, they look at each other and they're like, okay, we're not dealing with this anymore. And they leave. And then he realizes that he has, his legs have been amputated.
What?
And he has alien technology grafted on, like, alien legs, you know, like, somewhat like, wasn't quite metallic. It was, like, more, like, I wouldn't say bone, but it was kind of, like, you know, off-white, gray, you know, but futuristic looking. So right. At this point, it's like, okay, so I guess he was abducted by aliens, and that's why they're freaking out and everything. So keep going through the movie. He's able to escape at this point. Like, he takes his girlfriend, because now he has legs and he can walk. And he's got a lot of power in his legs. He can kick the doors down and everything. So he's like, all right, screw this. I'm out of here.
Sure.
So Lawrence Fishburne catches them at the last elevator. And he was like, I can only protect you if you stay down here. I cannot protect you if you go up there. And he was like, protect me from whom? So they go up, and then they're in, like, an old, unused sewer system, essentially. Like, old aqueduct, almost, looking kind of tubes and everything. He just happens to go the right direction the whole time, gets out to the Nevada desert, and then this car all of a sudden appears, and it comes up, and it's like an old Cadillac or something, or maybe an old Oldsmobile or something like that. And there's this old lady, and so like they start hitchhiking, like she's going to take them to the nearest truck stop. And this lady, oh my goodness, she was so creepy. She was like so overtly religious. Like, everything was, you know, something from God, or the angels are protecting us and everything. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this lady is completely lost it.
Hmm.
And so she drops him off at the truck stop, and like, he leaves his girlfriend on one of the footsteps for a big rig. And he goes in because he's going to make a phone call. And so he goes inside, and then he looks back, and she climbs into the cab from the passenger side of this truck. And it's like... It's like, okay, well, and he's like trying to make a phone call, and then a news report comes on the television, like, extremely contagious, you know, call the authorities immediately if you see this person. So he's like, oh no. So then one of the guys in this tavern, bar, cafe, whatever it is, truck stop, you know, rest stop thing,
mm-hmm.
goes out, just happens to go into the same truck that his girlfriend's in. And so it takes off, and he's like, wait. And then we realize, oh, now he can, with his alien legs, he can run super fast. So he catches up to the truck driver and gets knocked down. And then the truck driver takes off, like, super fast. And then he goes super fast to catch back up. And, like, the truck driver's reaching for the gun. And, oh, hey, look, his girlfriend's got the gun. It's like, what? It's like, how did this guy not know that she was in there with him this whole time?
This sounds like... four different movie scripts that all just got mm-hmm. kind of pasted together.
Yeah. So it gets even weirder than that. So they stop the truck. They get the truck driver out. And then the truck driver says, you're not going to get very far. And it's like, what? What's going on here? You know? And so they go off. They find an actual rest stop, and they stop in there. And they find a map of the area. But it makes absolutely no sense to them, because it's like, wait, weren't we over here? And this shouldn't be here, and that shouldn't be there. And they're freaking out. And then like the boyfriend's like focusing on the map, and then he looks away, and then his girlfriend's gone. It's like, what? It's like super strange. And then the television comes. Well, the television came on before that, but there was a television where the girlfriend was more or less sitting. And so then it cuts to Lawrence Fishburne, and he's like tracking down these two, and he stops the old lady, and like she's I wouldn't say freaking out, but you know, she's not making much sense. And then all of a sudden, like, blue blood starts coming out of her nose, and you're like, okay, something's very odd going on here, because Lawrence Fishburne is like, have you had any contact with these folks? And so then he shoots her, and Then he finds the truck driver. Like, they go to the truck driver's house, and they seal it up, like, before they even go in, like, plastic over the windows and everything, and they have to cut a slit through the plastic for Lawrence Fishburne to get in. And then the truck driver's, like, super immature, like, really, really immature, like a child, and tries to shoot him with a rifle, but there's no ammo in it. And then so Lawrence Fishburne just, like, shoots him, like, right on the spot. And I'm like, okay, this is strange. This is very strange. So we cut back, like, while they're sealing up this house, we think that it's the rest stop that they're at. Okay. Because prior to Lawrence Fishburne going into this building, they showed a scene with the boyfriend and girlfriend, and they hear something at the rest stop, and they're, like, freaking out. So then it cuts back to them, and it's their other friend that was with them. And he's, like, freaking out. He's in a hazmat suit and everything. And he's got alien arms. So you're like, okay, this is strange. And so it continues on, and they're trying to get out, and like they think that they're in Area 51. So because they have like essentially like almost an IP address tattooed onto them, onto their forearms. And it's the same for all three of them.
Okay. So
it was like 2341 or something like, no, 23, I forget. But whatever, I think it was 2310-41. No, that wouldn't make sense. 2351, right. That's what it was. Because when you add all that up, it adds up to 51. So it's like, oh, we're in Area 51.
So, okay, gotcha.
So they hop in the truck, and they're trying to get out of whatever facility that they're in. And suspicion gets aroused, and they throw up a concrete pillar so that they can't get out of there. And then the alien arm guy, you know, valiantly, you know, runs off and, like, goes into where the portable where they're controlling everything. And he almost gets blown up. And, like, because he's, like, trying to hack into the system so that they can get out of there. So he ends up getting shot a bunch of times, but he's not dead. And then he breaks the concrete pillar with his super arm, with his super strength. Then he starts pounding on the ground and causing everybody, like, shockwaves to knock everybody down. And you're like, wow, this is really strange. So they go, and well, Lawrence Fishburne has caught up to them and has set up a roadblock, and they throw road spikes, and the truck overturns, and they take the girlfriend, and then Lawrence Fishburne is like, you cannot reach her any longer. And he's like, don't even try it, because like he can tell that main character is like, well, I got these super legs. I can run super fast. So he does. He goes straight through a car. Like, there's fire. There's a fire ring on the car. Like, just he incinerates this portion of the car. It's like, okay, all right. And then he's going super, super, super fast across the bridge, and then boom, breaks through something. Like, and it's like, okay. And then Lawrence Fishburne, you know, all throughout this movie, he's like nonchalantly walks everywhere. He's like role playing walking, you know, and he nonchalantly walks up, takes off his mask. And you can see that his face is just a mask over some robotics behind him. Like, oh. So they were never on Earth after they were abducted by aliens.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Could they have any more plot devices in this? Like, seriously, that's five different scripts. Mm-hmm. That's five different movies just cut and pasted and mashed into one.
Yeah. And I can't believe I just spent all that time talking about the signal.
That's funny.
But, yeah, both my wife and I were like, okay, well, that was terrible.
That really is a terrible, horrible plot to a movie.
Yeah.
That's really bad.
Yeah, it was really bad. I can't believe I watched the entire thing. But we did.
But you did. Right.
But that... But then last night we watched Thor: The Dark World. That was actually...
I still haven't seen that.
That was surprisingly very funny and very good at the same time.
I still need to see that. I'm ashamed of myself that I haven't seen it yet.
Well, I was ashamed that I hadn't seen it yet either. But yeah, it... oh my goodness.
I don't know why it just kind of eluded me. I don't know. It came out at a weird time or something.
It came out when we were at BlizzCon 2013?
Yeah. Oh, was that when it was? Eh, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, right. It came out that same weekend that we were at BlizzCon 2013. So.
Okay, well, that makes sense. And
then I watched 47 Ronin with Keanu Reeves. Actually really liked that movie. I mean,
yeah.
It wasn't like, you know, a great plot. I mean, it was a very simple plot. Keanu Reeves plays as this quote-unquote half-breed. And he's ostracized from the samurai culture, but he's taken in by a samurai lord. And then there's this weird forced love story between the lord's daughter and Keanu Reeves' character, who they would never, ever be allowed to, you know, do anything together. But it was, the imagery in the movie was beautiful. I mean, I love feudal Japan and feudal China.
Oh, sure. Oh, absolutely. Stuff. Oh, Seven Samurai and
yeah,
Absolutely. I mean, even Last Samurai, you know, people criticized Tom Cruise in that. I thought it was a great movie.
Yeah. So it didn't amount to much more than just a revenge story, because their lord gets screwed over by another lord who's kind of made a pact with demons. And
like they do. I mean,
yeah. You know. I mean, you know, it's a dumb plot, but it was entertaining, and I enjoyed it. It was beautiful, so I'll say that. And then I watched As Below. Oh my goodness, I did that again. I said that last night. As Above, So Below. And this movie was kind of like one of those, you know, mockumentary style films where it's like all shaky cam, you know, like all hand cam stuff. From the perspective of either the filmer or later they go down into the catacombs underneath Paris. And so they installed like little, well, you couldn't see them, but I guess it was like a GoPro, you know, light and camera built in one. And it was a story where they were searching for the Philosopher's Stone. And, like, it starts off, she's in, I think, she's in Iran, and she's trying to find this secret chamber that had been long lost, long buried, long ago. And it's kind of like the Rosetta Key for this, I can't even remember the name of the guy that they were looking for, like, who had developed the Philosopher's Stone. But anyways, that's all secondary. So, right. So they track down, they're like, okay, like it's all in riddles, of course, you know, as every ancient, you know, if you screw up, you're dead kind of trap, you know? So
right.
they figure out that the Philosopher's Stone is halfway between Earth and Hell. And Hell is like, 741 feet below ground. I don't know where they get that number, but that's what they came up with.
That's so a fun number, why not?
Yeah, so they have to go halfway between there, and oh, hey, the catacombs are just conveniently the same elevation, right? Or something like that. And so she's trying to track down where, like, they go down into the catacombs on a tour. And the first thing I thought is, like, I would never take this tour ever in my life because, one, I'm claustrophobic. Two, I hate spelunking, even though, you know, catacombs aren't exactly spelunking, but it kind of has that same feeling, you know? Because right. That's one of my fears is, like, getting trapped in the earth. So then you throw, you know, the macabre on top of that with all the bones that are everywhere in the catacombs, and it's like, no, thank you. I would never do this ever in my life. But they can't, like, she's like, well, this is where we essentially need to tunnel a mile in this direction. And it's like, okay, well, that's not going to happen. So conveniently, there's this Afro guy, or guy with an Afro, I should say, sitting on a stool or something next to a pillar. And he's like, oh, you want to go track down this guy or something like that. I couldn't quite catch it. I was watching this super late, so I had the volume down.
Gotcha.
So they go to this nightclub, and then there's this, like, really freaky
emaciated?
Yes, emaciated. like, really, like, almost snow white skin, but super, like, jet black hair and, like, jet black mascara and everything. She comes out, and she's, like, got this death stare on the camera, and you're like, what the... You're like, okay, obviously she's something that we have to worry about.
Right.
And, like, as they get closer to the guy, and I don't know why, like, the documentary guy who's filming this one girl who's on this search for the Philosopher's Stone, like, he's filming while they're going through this nightclub, and then they find the guy, but then this girl, like, she's walking slowly by the window, and she's, like, looking in. And you're like, okay, this is kind of creepy. And it's like, I knew it was a horror movie. So at the same time, I also felt like, okay, well, all right. That's a very obvious plot device right there.
Right.
So there's another way in. They go in, and like, they almost get stopped by the police. Because, like, all of, like, the last three were about to go in, and then all of a sudden you just see somebody running out of nowhere and tackling one of the guys. And you're like, okay. So anyways, they essentially can't go, like, they finally all go down. And one of the guys did not want to go down because he had experience with this other girl. And he really didn't want to, like, he was like, stay away from this girl. But anyways, the whole thing is, like, they go down into hell. And you're like, okay. And hell is just, like, a mirror image of Earth, essentially. But everything's twisted in a, maybe not twisted, but, you know, it's not quite right. And there was some, there was some pretty good imagery in there. But the end of the movie was like, just was like, okay, that's it. That's it. All right. I was like, okay, sure. Like the leading right up to the end of the movie, like the last thing that they have to do is they have to make a jump down a small hole and they no longer have any of their gear to, you know, what's the word that I'm looking for?
Climb back up.
No, to descend down.
To descend, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Rappel down, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they no longer have any gear, so they just have to jump. And this is like a really deep hole, because they lit something on fire and dropped it down, and it never stopped. So it's like the leap of faith that you have to make. And the ending was just like, I was like, okay, that's it? Okay, all right, sure.
I hate that. Like, it's just lazy writing.
But it had some good images in there. There was
See, I hate horror movies. I'm not a horror.
There was a point where they were going like through like an aqueduct with a sewer, you know, like in the bottom of it. And before they had descended into hell, so to speak, it was just water. But.
Mm-hmm.
While they were in hell, it was blood and there were hands coming out of it. And then there were like these weird stone guys and there was,
yeah, it sounds freaky.
Yeah. It was good though. It kind of freaked me out a couple times, but
yeah, I'm not big on that stuff,
but the ending, not so good.
Okay. I just saw a movie last night, actually, that was outstanding. I'm real big on, I would call them, quiet relationship driven indie movies.
Okay.
Just movies where really not much takes place. It's just people's relationships play out and stories play out. Right. I watched one called Drinking Buddies, and it's with, I forget the guy's name every time, but it's Nick from, New Girl, and Olivia Wilde, Ron Livingston should be in everything as far as I'm concerned. That guy's awesome. He's definitely not in enough stuff. And it's just, oh, and, what's that other girl's name? Oh crap.
Looking it up.
Shoot. I really like this girl too. What is her name? You looking it up?
Anna Kendrick?
Anna Kendrick. Yeah. Anna Kendrick. Yep. I was watching that last night, and it's about these, Olivia Wilde, the other guy, and they work at a brewery. Craft brewery, and they just have this very cool relationship, and but both of them are also in a relationship, and I don't want to tell you too much. You really should watch it, but it's really good, really very good. The writing was excellent. Took a couple turns you really didn't expect, and just a really good movie. Like I said, I love that kind of stuff. I love that.
I love this synopsis on IMDb.
Now, what's it say?
But you know what makes the line between friends and more than friends really blurry? Beer.
That's very good. That's very apropos. Because the whole movie is about beer. I mean, they drink a ridiculous amount of beer in the movie because they work at a brewery. I mean, that's their, right. You know, that's their jobs.
Wow. It only
so
made,
it's good.
It only made $19,500 in its first weekend.
It's an indie flick. It's a quiet indie flick. Yeah. They never made
but
that much money.
But it did gross as of November 15th, 2013, $342,000. So that's pretty good for an indie flick. Probably didn't cost them more than maybe what? Couldn't have cost them much to make that movie.
No. I mean, they're really, in the whole movie, there were only three sets. There was two people's apartments, the brewery, and like a cabin. Yeah. So it's pretty much people. It's probably dirt people cheap. Who worked on the movie. It's probably their own, you know, their own places. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was really good.
Sam Rockwell really in this?
Sam Rockwell was in it?
I don't know. It says stars Sam Rockwell, Olivia Wilde. What the heck?
Sam Rockwell wasn't in it.
Yeah, he's not showing up as in the cast.
Yeah, he wasn't in it.
That's good job, IMDb.
Well, a lot of that times that stuff's crowdsourced.
Yeah. But still, why would they include give him a credit as a star in the movie when he's not even there?
I don't know. Yeah, but the same guy, Nick from The New Girl.
He was also Olivia Wilde was executive producer on this, so.
Oh, that makes sense. He did another movie I saw not too long ago called Safety Not Guaranteed with Aubrey Plaza from Parks and Rec.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was really good. It's just a kooky, funny, just ridiculous movie. Really very cool, though. Very, very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely recommend that one.
Oh, that reminds me.
Yeah.
Well, the Sam Rockwell reminds me. If you rent Thor the Dark World, rent it through Redbox on Blu-ray, because there are some amazing bonus features on that disc. There's a short involving I'm blanking on his name. Ben Kingsley.
And
His character from Iron Man 3, where he thought he was the Mandarin, but he wasn't.
Never see us coming.
Yeah. So they have this whole entire short. It's like maybe 10 minutes long. But that's a bonus feature.
Okay.
And I was like, that is a real bonus feature, you know?
That's awesome. So it was like a Marvel short, basically.
Yeah, it was a Marvel one-shoot is what they called it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Then they had the featurettes of the journey of Thor and Loki, and it was like a two-part thing that they did, and it was like a good 20, 25 minutes long. Like, that's also a huge bonus feature.
Right.
So Marvel's doing good stuff.
Marvel's doing great stuff, and actually, I was kind of surprised. We were at the Disney store yesterday. We just kind of stopped in, and they had Spider-Man stuff there. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Yeah, I actually took a picture of it. I'm like, so does that mean Marvel's getting back some of the control over Spider-Man now? Because I know that was part of...
I know Josh Whedon really wants to bring Spider-Man into the Avengers.
Yes. And I know also that was one of the things that kind of leaked out in the Sony hack, was that there is talk about Spider-Man being returned back in a... You know, they're entertaining the thought of selling it, I believe, is, you know, selling it back to them.
At this point, it would be a good idea for Sony to do that.
Yeah, but they already have merchandising rights. That's the interesting thing. They already have merchandising rights for Spider-Man. So, yeah. I mean, are they close to getting movie rights to him as well?
Well,
who knows?
I don't know, because, I mean, there's a Spider-Man figure for Disney Infinity. So,
Is there? Okay, I was not aware of that. Okay.
So they at least have maybe Marvel still able to use comic... Well, obviously they can still do Spider-Man comic stuff. I think it's just the movies that they can't touch, so...
Right.
Which is so dumb. It is
so dumb, I know. And that's why we kept going in those horrific Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies. The last two were quite good. I forget the kid's name, the new guy.
I don't know.
I like him.
I haven't seen either of those.
It's good. It really is. I quite enjoyed it.
I'm not a Spider-Man fan, so... I mean, honestly, if Spider-Man did not make it into the Avengers 3, when they... I think they're going to do the Infinity Gems War with Thanos. I think that's where they're leading up to, based off of conference that they held a couple months back, where they announced all of their plans for the next, until 2020?
Yeah, the timeline. Yep.
Yeah, so they're going to do the Infinity Wars. So that's going to be cool. Because this isn't really spoiling anything, but the little teasers that they do either before or after the credits in the movies, they teased Guardians of the Galaxy and Thor: The Dark World.
Nice.
So, they had the collector, what is it, Sif and, I can't think of the other guy's name. The big burly guy with the axe that's one of Thor's friends.
Yeah, the guy who's basically a dwarf except he's big.
Right. Yeah, they go to the collector and they have the red Infinity Gem. And so they're giving it to the collector because they don't want to have that and the Tesseract both on Asgard. So.
Okay. And the collector being Benicio del Toro?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's still him.
Yeah.
Nice. Very nice.
So yeah, it's like you see all this and it's like everything's interconnected. I mean, it was such a risk, but it's paid off so well for Marvel. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's so cool to see all these universes linked together. And it in the movies, like, everything's canon. So, for each other. So
I just, really cool. I'm worried. I don't want to say the word. I really don't want to see a Howard the Duck movie. Like, I hope they don't waste their time on that.
I think that was just a joke that they tossed in at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy.
I really friggin' hope so.
There's no resurrecting that IP, because Howard the Duck was terrible.
It was awful. It was so bad.
It was Marvel's attempt at getting kids into comics, right? That's what their whole premise was, except it wasn't quite kid-friendly.
Yeah.
Because he was kind of a rough duck, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, I remember going to see Howard the Duck when I was young, and I don't remember if I liked it or not, but in hindsight, I can say that I would not watch that movie ever again.
Right.
So any other movies that you finally caught up on? Because I've also been watching a lot of television, too.
I've been watching a lot of television. I caught up on all of The Arrow. Watched both seasons of that. What else? Sword Art Online. Watched that first season. Love that.
Did you get up to the end of the quote-unquote first half of this season? Or did you finish all of season one?
I watched all 25 episodes.
Okay, so that's all of it. How did you feel where they took Asuna and made her a victim? I kind of didn't like that. I really didn't like that.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Because it falls into a lot of, sexism.
Stereotype.
Tropes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And it didn't need to be done.
And she was such a strong character. Fortunately, she's awesome. When you catch up with Sword Art Online 2, Sword Art Online 2 is, this is not a spoiler, there's three different story arcs that are in it.
Okay, well, that makes sense, because, I mean, this first one kind of had three as well, sort of.
Yeah.
I mean, you had the first game, the second game, and then the third.
The new beginning for everything.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it, right?
Right.
Well, how would I see two?
It's, you can watch it over on Crunchyroll, and you don't have to be a member to watch it.
Really? Oh, it's a free one.
Yeah, you just have to deal with ads.
Whatever.
It's worth it. And also, you can only watch it in up to, I think, 480p. That's the other restriction. But because it's anime, you don't need to watch it in 1080p because it's anime.
It's anime, right, exactly. I watch it on a square format second monitor that's sitting next to my first monitor, so.
Yeah, I was able to full screen it even at 480p on my 24-inch monitor, and it looked fine, so.
And it looked fine? Oh.
Yeah. Fine. I mean, it's anime. There's not tons of detail in the picture, so.
Right.
a lot of it is flat shading, so it
exactly
you don't get a whole lot of artifacting. So anyways, yeah, Sword Art
Online 2. Here we go, Sword Art Online 2.
Yep. You have three different story arcs, and the third one is all Asuna. So at least they readdressed her.
Nice. Good. I like Asuna. She's a very strong character.
Mm-hmm.
The relationship of the cousin slash sister was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I like the trope, not tropes, just kind of the, not even tropes, like just really the realities of gaming that they talked about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like just the guild environment and forming relationships. And
they really, like once they get past the first part of Sword Art Online 2 and they dive into the second half of it, they really start addressing some of the social issues, like balancing school with game and life with game.
Nice.
They address let's say you have a family member who doesn't game and they think that what you're doing is a complete waste of time. They address that. Like they
come, okay. Well,
I wouldn't say address, but you know, they touch upon those ideas.
Okay. So, nice. I like that.
I liked that part of the second half, but I don't know. I kind of like it when it's when you have a very obvious drive through this story. Oh, okay. Hold on a second. And my son has to go to the bathroom.
That's fine. Yeah. Actually, probably pretty good time. We were an hour in, so.
Yeah. So, yeah. Next time, then I'll talk. Well, I guess we'll talk more about Sword Art Online 2.
I'm definitely going to start watching it.
And I finished all of Marco Polo, so we'll talk about that next time.
Ooh. Now, have you watched Peaky Blinders?
No, I have not watched that.
Okay, so your homework is Peaky Blinders and mine is Marco Polo.
Okay, and right. Legend of Korra finished that.
Beautiful ending. So far behind on that. Yeah. So brutally far behind.
Yep. And Rage of Bahamut, Genesis. Dumb name.
How did you...
It's based off a card game, but the story is a lot of fun. So.
I saw that. Did you text that to me? Or how did I even see that?
I posted a video of the intro on Facebook, but I've also
and you mentioned me in the thing. That's it. Yes. Okay. Yeah. That does look very good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun. So, alrighty. Really well, good. I gotta go help my son. You want to say bye, Nolan?
I can't see
you. It's an OLED. It's
bye.
An OLED. Say bye.
Bye.
Bye. Alrighty.
See you, man.
Yep, see ya.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening. Goodbye.